Welcome to the Law Hour. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour, an editorial review, is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 80 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and editorial review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on seeds of destruction when we come back. Well, Leviticus 19:19 tells us, "You shall not sow your field with mingled seed." Hybrid seed and genetically modified organisms are a crime. They violate this basic agricultural law of God. And a study from Cornell University says that an increasingly popular commercial corn, genetically engineered to produce a bacterial toxin to protect it against corn pests, has an unwanted side effect. That side effect is it kills monarch butterflies, and it kills the monarch butterfly larva in laboratory tests. Now the question that Cornell left unanswered is even more telling. What else does it kill? Surely butterflies aren't the only unintended victims here. Poisons, after all, aren't too picky. Does it cause mutations? And if so, what plants or animals or insects are affected? When do you know if you're eating it? Is it in your grits? Is it in your cornbread? We know it turned up in Taco Bell's tortillas. And then if it's in a food product, will it be labeled as containing genetically modified organisms, also known as GMOs? Will stores pull those products from the shelves like they did with tortillas after they got caught? Or will they just ignore the problem and look the other way? Well, so far, the government, the Department of Agriculture, the Food and Drug Administration, and the multinational seed, petrochemical, and food processing corporations have totally ignored critics of agricultural biotech, who want the government to require the labeling of these GMO foods. Now, in this battle between your health and safety and the financial interests of the multinational seed and food processing companies, you lose. Now, if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package? Remember, that's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. And it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free, and you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Our school on how to make $100,000 a year on 25 acres or less is also available on compact disc for adult home study. And if you're online, you can go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. All right, we've been talking about the seeds of destruction. First of all, we took a book out of the Money Changer and we started in on the GMOs. Then we shifted over to the climate news. It's called the Environment and Climate News. It's put out by an organization which is called the Heartland Institute. I recommend it. They've got a tremendous number of articles. Every month, the entire newsletter is aimed at the environment and climate, this global warming, and other issues that deal with the ecology movement, Greenpeace and so on. Now, once in a while, I take exception or I take issue with their articles. Last month, or the last program, rather, I took an article here called Greenpeace Farming Plan Would Reap Environmental Havoc Around the World. And I pointed out they're not lying to you. They're telling you the truth. That's true. And that's because there are two models in agriculture. One is the chemical agribusiness model that we adopted right after World War II. You see, prior to World War II, at least here in America, we practiced agriculture. And agriculture, of course, is small farms, which have a multitude of crops on each one of these farms. And they're produced organically. So the big multinational corporations, this is Standard Oil and their OrthoGrow operation, DuPont Chemical, you know, the major oil companies, pharmaceutical companies, they wanted to get in on the action. And the best way to get in on the action is to shift over to the European model, which was agribusiness. They got that from the Germans, the Russians. They got that from the Italians. And said, hey, listen, let's go with the Communist Manifesto. Let's make money. Let's create a monopoly. And they did. And Americans followed right along. So we've had cheap food produced by these agribusiness corporations. Well, we've had cheap food up until recent times. And it was a part of an overall plan which ultimately would culminate in these humongous famines described in Deuteronomy 28, Leviticus 26, and Revelation 6. And we're on the verge of these huge worldwide famines. It's an engineered policy is what it is, and it has a political overtone. The people in charge want to control the entire world. And Henry Kissinger summed it up very nicely. He said, when you control oil, you control the economy. When you control food, you control the people. So it's a two-pronged attack. Number one, they need to control the economies. They've done that through oil. They need to control the people through food. And the final chink, the final part of the plan is this genetically modified organism. They need that. And they're working hard to get it. Now, I told you in the last program, they've moved the wheat, the GMO wheat, to Australia. They couldn't get it into Europe. They couldn't get it in the United States. So they're going to put it into Australia. Then they'll manipulate the GMO wheat. The objective is to pollute all of the wheat supplies so it doesn't make any difference what you buy. For instance, we've already done it with corn. In this country, I can't buy any corn any place because the non-GMO and the GMO corn, when ADM, Cargill, when these big corporations buy it, they mix it all together. All right, so they got us. It's what we call in chess, check. All right, they got us in check. So it's all right. I will move from corn to some other feed grain, which I've done. I moved to oats. I moved to alfalfa. But little by little, they're going to move against alfalfa. I saw a piece of paper the other day. They're GMOing the alfalfa. That'll get all the dairy cows on GMOs through alfalfa. Well, they've already got the feedlots on corn and grains. They got that in the feedlots by GMOing the corn and soybeans. All right, check. They got us there. The ultimate end to this is to destroy agriculture and replace it worldwide with agribusiness. Then they can engineer the famines described in the Bible. And they're coming. Just get ready for it. Prepare. Now, they're not going to kill everybody in the world with famine. The ones they don't get with famine, they're going to get with disease. And I mentioned the last couple of programs. I said, you know, once they get this ball rolling, who's going to stop it? And the Messiah himself said in Matthew 24:22, he said, except I intervene, there would no flesh be saved alive. I would construe that to be human flesh. I'm not sure that they're going to get every worm, every nematode, and every cockroach. But I think it's well within possibility now to kill everybody on planet Earth. That's not exactly the plan they have in mind. They think they can stop it and save about 500 million alive. They're going to kill about 6 billion people over the next 40 years. That's the plan. So as we get propagandized from time to time, just about every time you pick up a piece of paper somewhere and you read a story, even sometimes in the same story, from the same organization, you get these contradictory statements. And so last time I pointed out this contradiction. This article here, Greenpeace farming plan would reap environmental havoc around the world. It is a pro-government. It is a pro-science, a pro-industry article, lambasting the natural farming methods, arguing that natural farming methods, organic farming, cannot feed 6.5 billion people. And they're telling you the truth. I agree with them. I don't believe for a minute that organics today could feed 6.5 billion people. Organics could feed 6.5 billion people in the hands of farmers practicing agriculture, but that's already been done away with. Farmers are not in control of agriculture. Agribusiness is in control of farming. And these big multinational corporations that are operating vast holdings in acreage over here, they haven't got the time, effort, or the money to practice organic agriculture. And they're not going to. And so now the seed companies come against these corporations and say, okay, let's shift over now to GMO. They will. They don't have any choice. They have to. And they're going to. So I mentioned the genie's out of the jar. And now that the genie's out of the jar, where do you and I go? What's the next step for Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife? Now, Greenpeace opposes the ultimate. Most of the world's crops may be made similarly nitrogen efficient. Arcadia already has begun transformations for nitrogen efficient wheat, sugar beets, and canola. Corn varieties already have doubled in nitrogen efficiency in weed and pest control in recent years, thanks to hybrid seeds. And Arcadia's new technology promises further gains in nitrogen efficiency for corn. Now remember, the product that comes out of GMO is nutritionally deficient. We learned that in the last program. So they're producing more and more nutritionally deficient foods, which in turn results in more and more disease. So they're going to use plague, disease, and famine, which is precisely what we see in Deuteronomy 28. So looking at it from my point of view, I say, well, what am I going to do to save myself out of it? Well, I've got to have control of my own food production. I've got to have at least a 4-year supply of food to carry me through while this insanity unfolds on the world scene. It'll run its course at some point in time. God says he's going to step in and intervene at some point in time, but I don't know when that's going to be. Is that going to happen before I get killed or after I get killed? I don't know. So it looks like to me I need to take some kind of action. And I recommend to my students that they take action. So for years now, we've set up a program here in our farm operation and suggested to all of our students in subsistence and survival. And in our farm program, you need a 4-year supply of food on hand for yourself and your own family. And then secondly, I can't think of a better business to be in than food in a famine. Can you? Food in a famine. Think about it. Now, the UN rejects organic farming. The United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization, the FAO, has weighed in heavily against organic farming. FAO has no reason to believe that organic agriculture can substitute for conventional farming systems in ensuring the world's food supply. FAO said in a December news release. The Food and Agriculture Organization Director General Jacques Diouf said, "You cannot feed 6 billion people today and 9 billion people in 2050 without the judicious use of chemical fertilizers." Well, now there's a problem with chemical fertilizers, boys and girls, so let's understand how this thing is going to work, because the ultimate end result of chemical fertilizers is death. And that's because the chemical fertilizers ultimately mine all of the organic material out of the soil, and without organic material in the soil, plants won't grow. Now, when we take a look at, let's go up to the top of the Rocky Mountains, and you'll come up to a dead zone up there, up around the 13,000-foot level. Nothing grows. It's just dead. Rock. All you see up there is rock. As you move down the mountain a little bit, you'll find that lichens and moss grow directly on the rock. So when the snow melts off, the lichen and moss will grow directly off of the rock, and it creates organic material. And as you go further down the hill, you'll see that there's more and more vegetation. You'll see a little patch of grass, you'll see some weeds, you'll see some brush. As you go further down the mountain, pretty soon you'll come into the scrub timber, the high scrub timber, and then you come into the timber area. Then when you get out of the timber area going down a little bit further, you come into the scrub timber, and then you come back into brush, and then you come into the grasses. And then when you get down into the valleys, you'll find the alluvial soils where you can grow rutabagas, tomatoes, and carrots. And this tells us quite a bit about the pecking order in vegetation. You go up too high, and it gets too cold, nothing grows. Where you don't have topsoil or organic material, nothing grows. The more organic material you get, the better things grow. Now, it is true that plants need certain chemicals, and they discovered in Germany back around World War I that they could use nitrogen and potash, that they could use these chemical fertilizers, and that the plants would just grow like weeds. And they do. It's true. They get magnificent growth. It's the envy of the world to look out over a cornfield with no weeds, dark green leaves, huge ears, lots of big plump kernels of corn. God, it's just marvelous. Here's our problem. You hybridize the seed, you chemically engineer the soil, you put on chemical fertilizers, two things happen. You get weaker and weaker plants. They look healthy and strong, but the nutritional vitality of the seeds that it's producing is lacking. And I had a fellow come in here one time to school, and he was talking about his pigs, and he says his pigs were dying. So they took him to the university, they autopsied them, and they came to a conclusion. They were feeding them a ConAgra ration, corn, soybeans, and others. But the protein content of the ration was down around 6%. And the pigs were fat. They were big, healthy, robust pigs. And then for no good reason, they just fall over, kick three times, and die. Couldn't figure it out. It's kind of like the bees, you know, the what they call the colony collapse syndrome. They open the beehive, and they're all gone. What happened to them? So they got to working on it a little bit, and they figured out that, well, the ration was deficient in protein. Pigs can't live with less than 8% protein, so they boosted the protein content of the ration, and sure enough, it solved the problem. Now, in Kansas in the 1880s, wheat, for instance, ran 24% protein. Today it runs 7 to 13%. Why is the protein content today less than it was 100 to 120 years ago? It's because we're mining the soil. Now, in the Bible, the architect of agriculture gave us some instruction. Evidently, he had done some experimentation along this line. And he said, every seventh year, you let the land rest. And when it rests, the grass grows up, and you don't harvest it. You don't make hay out of it. It just dies, and it decays and goes back into the soil. And it becomes the food for next year's crop. But it's not all of the food for next year's crop, because plants, while they have to have certain percentages of organic material, that's the dead bodies of past generations of plants that lived and died, they also make their own organic material out of inorganic material. So the plant gives off carbolic acid. The acid leaches out in the inorganic material in the soil, you know, the sand particles, rock, if you will, and converts that into a slush, and then it sucks it in, and it becomes organic. So let's suppose that you decide that you're iron deficient. So you go out and you pick up a nail, you take it into a grinding wheel, you grind the nail down, you get a pile of filings, and you slip that into a glass of water or maybe a glass of milk, and then you stir it up real good and you drink it down. Now, presto, look at all the iron you've taken into your body, a whole nail. That should be enough iron to keep you going for a year or more. But it isn't. What we find is that inorganic minerals are not assimilable in your body. So You can suck up all the iron filings you want, but your body can't use it, and it won't do you any good. Can't get iron from nails. But you could take that same pile of filings and throw it out on the ground, and you could, through the process of photosynthesis. So the way that works is the plant putting out the carbolic acid leaches out the iron and the minerals out of the soil, sucks it up into the plant, and converts it to organic. Now you can eat the spinach, you can eat the plant. And the plant then provides organic iron. Your body assimilates it, and it solves all your problems. Now, we know that disease comes from starvation or nutritional deficiencies. For instance, scurvy, vitamin C deficiency. Vitamin B17, we call it Laetrile, cancer. So we take a look at these diseases, and when we furnish those nutrients, the disease symptoms go away. Now, there's another factor that comes into the equation, and that is the insect pests. Years ago, they used to plant corn. You know, 100, 200 years ago, they plant corn. They get a wonderful crop in Alabama. So I said, well, if a little bit's good, a whole lot's got to be better. So they plant corn there every year, year after year after year. Pretty soon, the corn would get weaker and weaker, and insect pests would eat it up. Got to the point where, well, they couldn't grow corn there anymore. So in the old days, they used a process in agriculture called slash and burn. They'd just move over, abandon that 20-acre field, and go over here to a new portion of woods or brush, cut it down, burn it off, and plant corn. Grew great. And they could do that for another 10, 15, 20 years. Some places you can do it for 100. Ultimately, though, the plants would get weaker and weaker as the soil was mined out. And then the insect pest would come again, drive them out, and they'd just move on to the next spot, the next spot, this next spot. This is called slash and burn agriculture. So as this process went on, everything was great, except that the population continued to grow. And as more and more people occupy more and more of the real estate, such as in America today, we now have 300 million people living here, where at the time of the revolution, there were 3 million people living here. 3 million could slash and burn. 300 million can't. So today, 300 million people have to come up with a little bit better solution. So the chemical companies come along and say, hey, we got it. We can sell you the chemical nutrients that you need, you know, the NKP. And you can buy it in a bag, comes right out of the factory, and you can apply it to the soil, and it'll solve all your problems. So we do. And we shifted over from agriculture to monoculture, because over the years we learned that you have to rotate your crops. You plant corn one year and you plant a legume next year to put back into the soil that nitrogen that you took out with the corn, you put back in by growing beans. Crop rotation came into the program. Well, little farmers, little agriculturalists, guys like Rodale, for instance, experimenting with plants, Luther Burbank and others, you know, they put that information together, wrote it up in books, and gave us a pretty good understanding of how agriculture worked. Didn't make any money for the big corporations, so they decided what we need to do is create a propaganda program and get all these farmers to abandon agriculture and go into agribusiness so we can sell them chemicals. And that's what agribusiness is. It's a chemical. We're going to take the farm and convert it into a factory. We're going to use the factory business model to operate this farm. Instead of biology, we will turn to manufacturing. Well, they tried that in the Soviet Union. Didn't work. And I mentioned last time they had to give all the peasants a half an acre. That produced half the food, and the other half was produced on the big state farms, you know, the 10,000-acre job lobbers. So the solution then is if you give little guys a little bit of ground, they'll work it with agriculture, and agriculture produces about 10 times more than agribusiness. And remember that the agribusiness model is very popular because it's very efficient. One man can do hundreds of acres. Whereas in agriculture, one man can only do a few acres. So it takes lots of labor, lots of labor. And that's something that people don't want. They don't want lots of labor. They like to stand around the water cooler, pinching the girls on the butt, and spending their time watching movies and relaxing and enjoying life. They don't want to get out and work. So the agribusiness model caught on, and boy, did it. Now, here's the bottom line to this agribusiness. The plants, remember, we talked about up at the top of the mountain. Well, some plants require more organic material than others. For instance, here, we've got very rocky, poor soil, and you can go down to the rock ledges, and you'll see a tree, we call them the Eastern Red Cedar. They grow right out of the rock. It's a wonder to behold. And when you see that, you say, well, gosh, you know, these trees, they just grow right out of the rock. Well, that's not quite true. The Eastern Red Cedar needs about 80% inorganic material and about 20% organic material. See, it's not pure rock. It's got some dirt there, but not very much. And if you look, you'll see that there's no oaks or sycamores growing there. You won't find any rutabagas or carrots growing out of the rock because the soil is too thin, too poor. But it will support Eastern Red Cedar. Then you go to another location, and you'll see oak trees growing. The soil's just as poor, but it's not just solid rock. It's got gravel and rock and clay, and it's all mixed together. And that oak tree needs about 50% organic material and about 50% inorganic, and it can thrive. Where does this organic material come from? It comes from the dead, decaying foliage of last year's leaves, last year's dead branches, and last year's dead trees that fall on the ground and are consumed by the ants and the termites. and those 186,000 life forms that live in every cubic foot of soil. That's right, 186,000 life forms. Nematodes, ants, termites, spiders. And all these little critters are working in the soil to balance the soil and make a nutrient for the plants to eat. Now, we don't eat Western red cedar. And where these cedars and these oak trees grow, you won't find any rutabagas and carrots, spinach. But if you cut them off, you can then grow something in them as long as there's some organic material. Now, when you go to grow carrots and root crops and things like that, they need about 90% organic material and 10% inorganic. And that's why the Central Valley of California is such a wonderful place in Iowa, where they have deep topsoil, where they have a lot of organic material in that soil. But if you keep cropping on the same ground year after year, every year you take out of the soil, when you're shipping off, let's say, 5 tons of carrots off of your acre of ground, well, you've just shipped off 5 tons of your organic material. And there's a limit to how much organic material is in that soil. Now, Carrie Reams discovered years ago that we're actually getting heavier here on planet Earth, that the light coming from the sun is mass and matter, and that when it mixes with the photosynthesis of the plants, the total volume of mass, organic material, gets to be more. So they did some controlled studies and tests, and they put a seed in a box, and they weighed all the water, they weighed all the dirt, they weighed all of the mass that came off of it, and they found out, gee, it's heavier. You get more at the end of the year. Where does this mass come from? It comes from the light from the sun. The transfer of the mass and matter on the sun through light waves to the earth recombined with the photosynthesis and the plants and 186,000 critters down here in that soil, and it produces tomatoes and peppers and beets and carrots. And it just happens to work out that once every 7 years, if you let the land rest, it does the same thing, and it regenerates the organic material that you're shipping off every year. You see, with the plants converting the inorganic into organic, and then you get the photosynthesis and you get the light from the sun in a 7-year cycle, if you follow that biblical plan called the land Sabbath, the soil will never run out of organic material. The insect pests are never a problem. And that's because insects only eat the unhealthy plants. And that's just special. So when you pick up an apple and it's got a wormhole in it, or worse, it's got a half a worm left in the hole that you just bit out, then you say to yourself, that's disgusting, and you throw it down. That's exactly the way the design was intended. That worm is disgusting looking, and the reason the worm is eating the apple is because it's nutritionally deficient. It doesn't have enough vitamins and minerals in it. And it tastes real good to the worm, and you can't tell the difference, but you sure don't like eating worms, so you throw it down. And you pick up another apple, and this one doesn't have a worm in it. And that one is the worm, that is the worm-free apple, has all the vitamins and minerals in it. So the farmer comes along, and he can't tell the difference between a healthy apple and a sick apple. And he notices that the worms are eating up his apples, and he needs a solution. So he goes to his government, and he says, I need a political solution for my agricultural problems. Give me a minute, and I'll come back, and we'll take up. The government now enters agriculture and converts it to agribusiness, and there's an agenda. Stand by. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide on the Internet daily. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement only. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the website as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. In the Law Hour, an editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements are recommendations that we give. Don't mean that the authors or publications that we endorse and recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate. Most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information, please go to our webpage, georgegordon.org. GeorgeGordon.org. Here you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about Seeds of Destruction. The book that I was citing from was an interview which was conducted by the Money Changer. That's Franklin Sanders. A copy of that book, or a copy of this article, I guess I should point you to the article first, comes from the Money Changer, Post Office Box 178, West Point, Tennessee, and the zip code 38486. Again, that's the Money Changer, Post Office Box 178 in West Point, Tennessee. It's the March 2008 edition of the Money Changer newsletter. You can call them direct. It's toll-free, 888-218-9226. That's what I'd do. I'd call Franklin direct. That number is 1-888-218-9226. All right, then as a corollary to that, I picked up the environment and climate news put out by an outfit called the Heartland Institute. Let me give you their name and number. They're a pretty good outfit. I kind of like their publication. I don't agree with everything they print all the time. Once in a while, they get it kind of screwy, but most of the time, they've got good information. It's called the Heartland Institute, 19 South LaSalle Street, number 903. That's the Heartland Institute, 19 South LaSalle Street, number 903, Chicago, Illinois. Chicago, Illinois. The zip code is 60603. 60603. Now, the two models that we were talking about here, and I said we'd come back to them. Remember, we've got agriculture has been around for thousands of years, and little farmers like me, we go out and we till the soil and we take pretty good care of our soil because that's where we make our living. We're not mining it. Agribusiness, on the other hand, is a business model. It's a corporate business model, and the bottom line is profit. A little guy like me, I'm concerned about how much vitamins and minerals are contained in my food because I'm selling organic produce to people who want to buy the very best, highest quality foods that contain the most vitamins and minerals. Now, corn should contain 16% protein, not 8%. And wheat should contain 24%, not 7 to 13%. That's the protein. All of these plants should contain minerals and amino acids and enzymes and in abundance to promote good health. Now, in the agriculture model, we strive to produce that. In the agribusiness model, we don't. In the agribusiness model, we're only interested in profit. After all, a corn farmer gets paid for bushels of wheat. He does not get paid, or excuse me, a corn farmer gets paid for bushels of corn. The wheat farmer gets paid for bushels of wheat. He doesn't get paid for the protein content in that grain. Nobody says to him, oh, your protein content is low, so we're going to pay you less money. They're not interested in that. And housewives aren't interested in that. And manufacturers of tortillas aren't interested in the nutritional quality of the grain. We presume it's all there, but I pointed out, I had a pig farmer come down here. His pigs are dying because they were starving to death. The protein content was under 8%. Pigs have to have a minimum 8%. So when the protein content in corn is 16%, why, they've got more protein than they can use. All right, so now what happens over time? As we mine our soil, as we ship off to market our apples and pears and wheat and corn and milk, we're mining the organic material out of the soil. So over time, the insect pests come in. Now, in times past, remember, we just abandoned the land and we went out and slashed and burned some new land. Today, we can't do that. There's not enough land out there. Government now has a third of it. At least in this country, they do. So real estate's at a premium, and so we have to have a solution. And so we go to our lawmakers, and our lawmakers say, okay, what we need is a Department of Agriculture. So back in the 1860s, under the Lincoln administration, they created the Department of Agriculture. And then over time, this bureaucracy grew and grew. And as it grows, it becomes the lapdog of the industries that support it, the lobbyists that buy and pay for it, like the pharmaceutical industry has bought and paid for the Food and Drug Administration. So Cargill and Archer Daniels Midland, their representatives, we call them lobbyists. They go in there and they bribe and they buy and they own the congressmen and the bureaucrats that run these agencies. And that's what we call fascism. So now when the insect pest is bothering the crop, the farmer, instead of going to the Bible, instead of going to maybe science to find out, well, what's causing my problem, he goes to the politician. And the politician's happy. He'll do whatever this farmer wants for his vote. I remember old Alvin Barkley. He He was running for re-election one time. I go, Barkley, if I remember, he's from Texas. Came back home, he was running for election, and he reminded all of his constituents, says, now remember all that pork that I got for you? Remember all these benefits that I've been sending back to you, you know? Now remember who did that, and you remember to vote for me. And this one old farmer, he stood up and he said, hey, I've been voting for you in the past, and I appreciate you, but what have you done for us lately? So politicians have to be doing something for their constituents lately. And that's why they've got this pork. They like to be doing stuff for you and spending money and keeping the military bases open in your districts at the expense of somebody else. So when the farmer comes to the politician says, well, we got to have some bill, some program. They go to the Department of Agriculture. They come up with lending programs. And then the big corporations come in. They came up with a neat idea. They said, well, what we'll do is we'll put poison out there. And so they develop sprays. Now we spray our fruit trees up to 14 times a year. This, of course, puts this poison on the fruit. You eat the poison on the fruit, and that gives you debilitating diseases. So you go to the politician to say, well, we got to have a cure for these diseases. Politicians, they're out in the business of finding cures. And so I remember President Nixon, he said, well, we're going to have a war on cancer. We're going to spend taxpayer dollars and find the answer, the cure to cancer. That was back in the 70s. We're still spending billions, and we're still looking. So the politicians don't have the answers any more than the doctors can cure cancer, but they've got the money to spend because they're taking it right out of your pocket. They have a bottomless barrel that they can take these taxpayer dollars from, and they spend it. They spend it lavishly. And in the process, they have converted agriculture into agribusiness. They bought into the agribusiness model. Now, as we continue on, we continue mining the soil. And then the hybridized seeds don't work as well. And then the sprays don't work as well. So they're now coming up with a new program. We're going to have genetically modified. See, we're going to play God now. We're going to genetically modify these seeds. And we're going to chemically grow these modified seeds. And every time we do this, we dig our grave a little deeper. We're just digging the pit just a little bit deeper. And the ultimate end of this is when you have total collapse of the agronomy. That happened up in Wenatchee, Washington. I'll describe that one for you. See, they were farming up there, and they were just doing great. They had apples, and the apples came off of the healthy soil, and there was no insects. Everything was going great. They never let the land rest. They never practiced that land Sabbath. And it went on for many, many years. And so, you know, you let it go 7 years, and you practice no land Sabbath, and then 14, 21, 28, 35, pretty soon, we don't need to practice land Sabbath. That's just religious nonsense. So then, as time went on, they started to have some worms come in there, and pretty soon they got more and more worms, and so they needed to spray, and so they did. You know, the politicians get in on the act, and then the Department of Agriculture, and then you get a bunch of people from college, and they come out there, and they get in on the act, and then you get Ranger Rick and all these government bureaucrats and all these corporate executives, and pretty soon they were spraying arsenic. The old days had arsenic spray. Kind of worked like a shot, killed all the insects off. Now, you people can't tell the difference between one apple and another. The insects can. You know, the worms, they can tell the difference between a healthy apple and a sick apple, and they attack the sick apple, and they eat it. But the farmer, he doesn't get paid for healthy apples over sick apples, he gets paid for apples. And it worked because by spraying the arsenic on the apples, it killed the worms. And now nobody could tell the difference, and he's getting paid for all of his apples. Of course, you, the consumer, you're starting to get sick and diseases proliferate because you're not getting nutrition out of the apple, you're getting deficiencies. Well, this process went on and on for a long, long time, and pretty soon the apple tree started to die. You see, the arsenic in the soil became so toxic that it killed the trees. So now, in many places around Wenatchee, Washington, where they used to spray arsenic, it's a dead zone. You can't grow anything there now. Now, to reclaim that soil, you'd have to go in there and you'd have to remove all that arsenic that you sprayed on there. I imagine that might be a pretty pricey project. That'd be a good job for the EPA. That'd keep a bunch of people off the streets and out of the pool halls for a long time, wouldn't it? Meanwhile, that land up there is turned into a moonscape, doesn't grow anything. We didn't learn anything from it. We just move over and import the apples from China or someplace else and tell those people that what they need is to spray their fruit. Now, along comes Greenpeace, and they say, you know, if we continue doing this, we're going to kill ourselves because we're going to destroy all of the fertility in the soil. So we have to go back to organic farming. That's their message. I couldn't agree more. I think they're exactly right. But we've already adopted the agribusiness model, and we can't go back to organic farming with the agribusiness model. So the only alternative is to go back to agriculture and organic farming at the same time. And that's going to be so traumatic, you people can't stand it. So you're going to continue on doing what you're doing because that's the short-term, immediate, beneficial way to behave to get the short-term benefits. Long-term, it's going to kill you. Short-term, it's going to make you money. So I take a look at that and I say, well, okay, that's like the Titanic sailing at 22 knots into a field of icebergs. And everybody hopes, everybody believes that the ship can just sail right straight through here at 25 knots and we're going to miss all the icebergs. That could happen. Of course, in the case of the Titanic, it didn't, but it could have. You know, if that ship had just been over, you know, to the left 50 feet or so, it probably would have missed the iceberg. But it wasn't over 50 feet. It was 50 feet in the wrong direction. So for a lot of us, you know, us diehards out here, we take a look at this ship and we say, you know, it looks like to us that our Department of Agriculture, our Food and Agriculture Administration or organization with the United Nations, our farm groups and organizations and our agribusiness chemical farmers over here are driving this ship right into the icebergs. And so we're sitting here saying, well, we need a way off. So we take a look and we say, well, it looks like to us we need to have a food supply on hand. We need to have the means to produce more food. We need to have open pollinated seeds of our own. And we need to learn how to grow those seeds organically without chemicals and without pesticides. And there's not very many of us. There's a few, but there's not very many. Now, I think that the great reward that comes from this is recorded in a biblical verse. I got to tell you this. It's in 2 Kings chapter 6, I believe it is. Let's flip over here and see if that's correct. 2 Kings chapter 6. We're looking here at a famine. And this lady goes out and she buys a donkey head. Yeah, she bought a donkey head. She paid 80 ounces of silver for it. Listen to this. It came to pass after this that Ben-Hadad, king of Syria, gathered all of his host and went up and besieged Samaria. There was a great famine in Samaria. And behold, they besieged it until an ass's head was sold for 40 pieces of silver and the fourth part of a cab of dung's dung for 5 pieces of silver. I mean, they were paying 5 ounces of silver for dove manure. How would you like to be reduced to eating dove's dung? Now, this donkey head was unclean to start with. Near as I can figure, there's about 5 pounds of meat on a donkey head. Maybe, you know, if you got the brains out and you got the cheeks and the tongue, maybe you could get 5 pounds off of it. I doubt it, but maybe. But you know what? If silver's selling for $20 an ounce and it's kind of knocking at the door there, it's a little below 20, but just to round it off to 20 times 80, you know, just to give you a number here, that's $1,600. You know, in today's dollar market, would you like to pay 1,600 Federal Reserve Note dollars for a donkey head? So you could get 5 pounds of meat? Well, 1,600 divided by 5 is $320 a pound. Now, that's pretty pricey food, wouldn't you say? Pretty pricey. Now, if I suggested that we go back to practicing land Sabbaths and Jubilees out of the biblical, you know, the biblical instruction over here, you people would say, well, that guy's a lunatic. He's nuts. And most people, you know, if you suggest that we abandon, this is Greenpeace now and other ecology organizations, suggest that we abandon the agribusiness business model for agriculture and go back to practicing agriculture in its organic form, you know, leaving aside land Sabbath, just practice organic agriculture. It doesn't produce as much and the price of the food is higher. I got to tell you. But the benefit that we derive from it, while we pay more money for the food has all of its nutrients, then we don't get sick. If we don't get sick, we don't need health insurance. I can save about $12,000 a year on health insurance by eating organic food. That's what I do. That's what my family does. And we try to monitor our health and avoid sickness. And if I'm not sick, I can work. If I'm working, I'm making money. And if I'm not spending the money on health care or health insurance, then my standard of living is better. So it looks like to me there's a cause and effect relationship that comes out of this. You know, let's be pragmatic. You wanna have a little fun and frolic on Friday night, so you go down to Flo's Whorehouse, you know, tear off a little, and so you run the risk of getting AIDS, herpes, and VD. So I always suggest, you know, if you're gonna go down to Flo's, you probably need a health insurance policy. You won't get VD every time you go down there, but once in a while you will, and it costs some money to take care of that at the hospital. You know, they're getting a little pricey now. And so now you gotta go to the doctor and you gotta get sofa drugs and penicillin, you gotta go to the hospital, and you gotta get shot up, and you might come down with AIDS. Now to die with AIDS costs $100,000. I mean you really need health insurance if you're gonna practice risky sex behavior. $100,000. And then you won't die right away. It takes 5 to 7 years now. They got some pretty good drugs out there. Drugs are getting better. Instead of dying in a year or two, you die in 7 or 8 years. But over 7 or 8 years cost you money to buy the drugs, cost about $100,000 now to die from AIDS. Now, we could avoid that, you know, if we had better food and we practiced better law. the point I'm making is that there's an outcome that comes from it. So if you want to practice agribusiness, there's going to be a conclusion. There's going to be an answer to that. There will be a result that comes from it. If you practice agriculture, we've been doing that for 4,000 years. We've had a pretty good result practicing agriculture. This agribusiness hasn't been around very long, and it has already destroyed a lot of land. We can see the land that's been destroyed. We can see the soil erosion. We can see the nutritional deficiencies in the plants that we're growing. And some of us are beginning to look at it and say, I think we made a mistake back in 1945, 46, 47, making this conversion to agribusiness. I think we need to go back to agriculture. Now, of course, not very many people agree with us, but I just thought I'd pass that along to you, and then you can make your own decision. Now, this publication that I'm going to recommend, I castigated them on these two articles. Australia will promote drought-resistant crops. I tore that one apart. And then Greenpeace farming plan would reap environmental havoc around the world. I disagreed with that one, and I told you why. But the publication is called the Heartland Institutes, and that's their publication. And it's called Environment and Climate News. And I don't know what the price of it is. It's probably $35 or something. It's not very much. Call them up and ask them, or get them online. It's called the Heartland Institute. I'm sure you can dig them out. And they got a fax number here. I could give you their fax number. It's 312-377-5000, rather. That's their fax number. 312-377-5000 is their fax. Oh, here's their telephone number. It's 312-377-4000. 4000 is their telephone number. I think you'll enjoy it. I've used it many, many times and did a number of programs. They've got good science and they've got good stories. Next time, we'll take a look at some more good stories that come out of the Environment and Climate News published by the Heartland Institute. Meanwhile, let me remind you that you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour, or The Law School and The Law Hour, is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, our time's up. We've got to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.